namely a booster that will increase and optimize their protection.
More U.S. booster vaccines. It's Tuesday, October 26th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascio in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, resettling Afghan refugees. Israel welcomes Indian immigrants. Squid Games, wide appeal. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Millions of people in the United States are gearing up to get COVID-19 booster shots amid ongoing controversy over vaccine mandates. VOA's Michelle Quinn reports.
With 77% of Americans having received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, people are talking about what they should do next. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has approved booster shots to some extent for all three approved vaccines, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, and Pfizer. For the booster, the CDC says people can pick a different shot than the one they received, essentially mixing and matching vaccines. Dr. Anthony Fauci is the White House's chief medical advisor. He spoke on ABC this week.
That allows a considerable degree of flexibility for people to get what we hope they will get, namely a booster that will increase and optimize their protection.
This week, health officials will meet to discuss Pfizer's report that its vaccine is safe and effective for children ages 5 to 11, setting up the possibility that inoculations for them may start in early November. News of boosters and the possible vaccination of children comes as a little more than 22% of adults in the U.S. have yet to receive a single dose. Employers continue to roll out vaccination mandates. American Airlines says its employees must submit proof of vaccination by the end of November or face being fired. New York is offering city employees who haven't been vaccinated $500 for their first dose, but promising consequences for those who refuse. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
If not, as we saw with healthcare, with education, you get a letter that says on November 1st, you're going to go on leave without pay. We don't want that for anyone. We just want to get people vaccinated.
The New York City Police Union said the decision to be vaccinated was a personal medical decision, and it would seek legal action to protect members' rights. Vaccine mandates remain controversial, with 58% of Americans saying in a recent Hill-Harris-X poll that the directives are helping the battle against COVID-19. 24% say mandates are hurting. That divide is similar when it comes to whether the mandates are helping the economy, with 51% saying the policies help, and 35% say they hurt. How the U.S. handles the pandemic in coming months will likely have a political fallout. In addition to the pandemic, Americans are worried about the economy, inflation, and supply chain issues. In recent weeks, President Joe Biden's approval rating has slipped, averaging 43%. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Find more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. China to vaccinate children aged 3 and up as cases spread. Amnesty International to close Hong Kong offices. Evergrande says it has resumed work on 10 stalled projects. UN says nearly 23 million Afghans face acute hunger. Uzbekistan's incumbent leader wins second term in office. Full coverage on all these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. Thank you for listening to VOA Asia on this Tuesday. More than 50,000 Afghan refugees who are now housed at U.S. military bases will be resettled throughout the United States in coming months. The largest number will be heading for California and Texas. As VOA's Mike O'Sullivan reports, the Afghan-American community and local officials are getting ready.
Afghan-Americans in California protest what they call the Taliban government's repressive and cruel behavior during separate rallies in San Diego and Los Angeles in August and September. Now they're preparing for the arrival of Afghan refugees. One aid worker says the refugees are relieved to have fled a country led by the Taliban. Fayez Nawabi is policy and advocacy manager for the Council on American-Islamic Relations, California.
They're also very thankful that America was able to accept them, and then also that the Amemsa community, the Arab, Middle Eastern, Muslim, South Asian community, worked really hard to pool resources to help these individuals find housing, to help pay for basic necessities.
One Afghan-American who worked as an interpreter for U.S. forces resettled in the U.S. with a special immigrant visa in late 2012. He's helping to store supplies for newcomers, but also worries about Afghans left behind. Former U.S. interpreter Lutfullah Saadet.
People are losing their lives. Taliban are searching. They are saying one thing but doing another thing.
Saadet says dozens of his family members are living in fear in Afghanistan, including a brother who once worked for U.S. forces. Millions of Afghans have fled war in the country over the last 40 years. The UN Refugee Agency says 90% of those refugees now live in Iran and Pakistan. California will receive more than 5,000 Afghan refugees in the first group. Some communities are asking for federal help and for locals to step up, too. San Diego County Supervisor Joel Anderson.
All these folks need placement, and it makes sense that they're placed with people that speak the same language that can help them immigrate.
Afghan Americans are not optimistic about the future of their homeland, but still hope for change, says Fayez Nawabi.
We want to see an Afghanistan that is free, an Afghanistan that is peaceful, an Afghanistan that believes in human rights for all people.
In the meantime, tens of thousands of Afghan refugees will join others who have built a better life in America. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Still to come on VOA Asia, immigrants from northeastern India arrive in Israel to start their new lives. Happening now in Asia, as of Monday, Tokyo restaurants no longer face alcohol bans or restricted business hours because new COVID-19 cases in the city have plummeted from a mid-August high of nearly 6,000. The Japanese capital reported 19 new cases on Sunday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Continuing now on VOA Asia, Israel recently welcomed the arrival of another group of immigrants from northeastern India. Believed to be descendants of one of the lost tribes of Israel, for 2,700 years they have followed Jewish practices. Linda Gradstein reports.
The latest group of B'nai Menashe, or children of Menashe, arrived in Israel earlier this month. They trace their ancestry back to one of the 10 lost tribes of Israel, the tribe of Menashe. The B'nai Menashe were brought to Israel by Shavei Israel, a nonprofit organization dedicated to finding lost tribes and bringing them as immigrants to Israel.
Throughout their sojourn in exile, the B'nai Menashe continued to practice a biblical form of Judaism. They kept the Sabbath, they kept kosher, they celebrated the festivals, they observed the laws of family purity, and they also nourished a yearning to return to the land of Israel.
During more than 10 years, Shavei Israel has brought 5,000 B'nai Menashe to Israel, with another 6,500 still waiting in India to emigrate. While they keep kosher and observe the Sabbath, they are not recognized as Jews by the Israeli rabbinic establishment. They must officially convert to Israel after they arrive and remarry in an Orthodox Jewish ceremony. One of these B'nai Menashe couples, Devorah and Avihu Haukip, were married 5 years ago in India, but had a second group wedding ceremony in Israel.
As soon as we landed in Israel, we did a conversion and a second marriage, because while we were in India, we had not yet converted. So we moved up spiritually as well as physically.
Devorah Haukip says moving to Israel has been a dream come true.
When I heard about the news, I'm really excited and happy. I've been waiting for this to come true since my childhood, I should say.
The Haukips are among some 1,000 B'nai Menashe who moved to this town in the Galilee, Nof HaGalil, 10 months ago. They are all studying in an intensive Hebrew course to prepare them to fully enter into Israeli society. Shavei Israel hopes to bring the entire community, as well as other lost tribes, to Israel over the next few years. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Nof HaGalil in northern Israel.
Finally on VOA Asia, the South Korean television show Squid Game has become Netflix's biggest series launch ever, topping 111 million viewers globally. Karina Bafrajan examines the phenomenon of the Squid Game.
Since the mid-September release of the South Korean series Squid Game on Netflix, over 132 million people around the world have started watching the show, according to Bloomberg. No other Netflix project has become so popular so quickly. The 9-episode series is about a world where children's games turn deadly. People who are deeply in debt play to win a giant cash prize, but in these games, the loser dies. Despite its dark content, the show was an instant hit.
The idea that it really taps into something we can all identify with, or many of us can identify with, which is the idea of being on the edge of an economic disaster. And then the way they handle it.
It's a relatively new thing for Americans to enthusiastically embrace a foreign TV show.
For so long, I mean, Americans were really known for almost their stubborn, aggressive adherence to not consuming product made in another country. We exported all of our movies and our music and our TV shows, but very few things came the other way. But I think we've been slowly but surely kind of training the ugly American attitude towards this stuff.
Squid Game isn't just a hit in the U.S. and South Korea. It's a worldwide hit. One Beijing cafe, for example, holds workshops for those willing to make sugar cookies, just like the ones in the show.
I watched the show and I thought it was very interesting. I was especially impressed by the episode with the cookies. There are a lot of young people among our customers who also love the show. So we decided to give them a chance to make those cookies themselves.
And in Moscow, visitors to a Korean cafe chain can play a game involving sugar cookies, similar to the one in the show. They need to, using only a needle, carve a particular shape on top of the cookie without crumbling it.
My task is to keep an eye on the people. If they lose, I need to bring them their punishment. In our case, it's pepper. We also keep an eye on time. We only give 10 minutes per game. So we make sure each player has only 10 minutes.
It's still unclear whether there will be a second season of Squid Game. Neither the show creators nor Netflix representatives have made any statements yet. But since Netflix's profits for the show reached about $900 million, it seems to make sense, at least financially. Karina Befredjian for VOA News, Washington.
That's all the time we have on VOA Asia. Make sure to find us on Facebook, VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA Asia, and on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Gaskill in Washington. Enjoy the day.